Hi everyone, Flammable Penguins Podcast is back, and this time I've grabbed the team from AquaAttack, the key members of the AquaAttack team. AquaAttack's just come out this week. It's coming out on
7th of July.
And with me I have Tony Carter, who is the main program on it, and David Heffield, who is
who?
DT.
That'll do.
DT will do. Okay. DT, who did most of the art for the project. So, first of all, what are your thoughts? I'll start with you, DT, on the project. Okay. Did you find anything you really enjoyed with it?
I mean, it was a bit of a difference in what we normally do, and it was nice just to work with one programmer and one artist on a game. Got to experiment a little bit and do some nice little animations and stuff like that. It was good.
And Tony?
Yeah, definitely. It's back to making games old school, just two people, a lot easier, quicker design choices, and faster prototyping. And it was quite a challenge to try and get a game out in 6 weeks, I think, was in the total time we finished in.
Yeah, because we got Glow out first, which was for the Samsung Wave, and that was our first original IP we pushed out. And then we did AquaAttack, and I've got to say, AquaAttack seems to have gone much smoother and has generated a very addictive game. I mean, generally through the office, people were very keen to play it and put up high scores.
Yeah, I think a lot of it came down just to getting people to play it. As soon as people found it too easy, I just went straight back in and made it more challenging. And that just did seem to spark people's interest to try and beat it and try and play longer. I think going back to a traditional puzzle format that most people know, it made it really easy for everyone to pick up and play straight away.
Originally with the art, DT, you had geometric shapes, or what was your original art was quite simplistic in terms of its form. How did you come to the fish motif in the end?
Well, the initial shapes were there so people could tell the difference between them without having to actually look at them properly. We tried to bring that into the fish themselves as well, where it was the shape of the fish was constant throughout, but the pattern and the colours were different for each fish, and it was meant to represent ease of use for most players. Including colourblind players.
Yeah, that's something we talked about before. We were sending around Photoshop filters for colourblind people and stuff, and it is something that we need to consider, you know, accessibility. So the game art is colourblind friendly.
Hopefully,
as best as we can. Initially it was all just different colours, then we realised that just from normal testing in the office, quite a few people struggling between blue and grey and stuff, so that's at that point we decided to add patterns and shapes onto the fish as well, and it also adjusted the colours to more distinct colours, and it did seem to help a lot, I think, in the long run.
Yeah.
And hopefully it's a more accessible game for everybody out there.
So, I mean, the game, the arcade mode is, I think, the most addictive, the just pick up and play and go. But what was the thinking behind the puzzles?
There are 50 challenges. We had a lot of ideas. I mean, once we did the initial arcade mode, a lot of people played it, and we came up with a lot more modes that we wanted to do. The idea of just adding another mode was just to increase the amount of content that you got in there to try and pack out the worth that, you know, you're going to get out of your £2.50 when it's bought off PSN. We do have ideas for other modes as well, which we didn't have time to put in, but we still definitely think it's value for money, and hopefully if we do a sequel we can get the rest of the modes in.
So, I mean, as I say, previously we've always worked on console titles, and there have been fairly big teams, and on this there was just the two of you. What was the most difficult thing switching down to such a small team?
Tony's accent, right?
I don't know. I think in a lot of ways it made things a lot easier, because even though we were working as a small team, we're still in an office with a bigger team, and so we could still get feedback from other people and help from other people. I guess having to do it literally everything yourself could get a bit frustrating. Being a manager for the past few years, I've passed nearly all the coding off onto other people, so it was a it was fun, and also could be annoying at times having to do all of the coding literally myself.
I quite enjoyed doing all the artwork myself. I'm very anal when it comes to stuff like that, so having control over all of it was nice for me. I enjoyed that.
Do you think that lent a stronger style and distinctiveness to the art, having a single person rather than a shared?
Maybe it kept more conformity across the whole game. I don't know if it actually enhanced it at all or anything like that, but it did definitely keep a nice style across the whole game, and there wasn't anything that stood out that shouldn't have been there, which you tend to see in some games, so...
Okay, well, very, very cool. The other thing that we talked about a lot last week with the QA team was getting difficulty right and getting high scores right. Now, we've actually done a lot of focus testing with this game, more than most games we do, to get the high score tables up and that sort of thing. What have your discoveries been with difficulty in getting that the right level?
Well, with Aquatac, because there isn't a point where you literally, with the initial design, where we just ended, like in Tetris, it gets to the top of the screen, it just ends. So we had to make it a time-based game. And we did go through four or five iterations where people actually got so good at earning bonus time that the game would never actually end. So, yeah, we went through quite a lot of iterations, making it more and more difficult, which we succeeded in. And certainly with the challenges, we kind of just made 50 challenges straight off, didn't try and think about difficulty of any of them. We let people play them, see how fast they could do them, recorded all the times, then we reordered them, let people go again, and I think we reordered levels three or four times, just basing it on how fast people did it and how many turns it took them to do it at each particular level. And we even found that some levels were incompletable by anybody, so yeah, we also toned down some of the challenges, but we also tried to keep it high. A good standard, like from easy, over 50 challenges from easy to hard, and the last challenges certainly are a challenge for most gamers out there, I would have thought.
Well, the other thing is the PSP. It's a platform that doesn't get much attention, and the PSP minis is how we've done Aquatac. And what are your thoughts on PSP mini, and why did we choose to do Aquatac on PSP mini?
I think the main reason to choose PSP mini, unlike all of the rest of the distributions through the traditional Sony, Microsoft, Nintendo, is there is no initial stage of showing the game.
There's no concept approval.
There's no concept approval whatsoever, so we could just make it, put it out there. Sony won't say, wouldn't refuse to put it on. So it was just about getting a game out as quickly as possible, because a concept approval generally will take a minimum of a month to get through any of the three major console manufacturers. And also, from a company thing, we've already put product out on Bada and for Samsung, and working on stuff for iPhone, and we wanted to get something out on PSP as well, just so we can start to get metrics back about sales on each platform, and hopefully all the games will be at some point ported to all the other different platforms, so everyone will get a chance to get hold of the titles.
Okay. How has doing art for the PSP been? Because it's quite a nice screen on there, quite a, you know, the widescreen format and everything. How have you found that?
Yeah, it's pretty nice to work on. You are constrained, obviously, but as long as you're aware of that from the off, you can make adjustments for things that you want to show. Keep things quite simple and straightforward, and people agree it's worked out all right.
What's your favourite game element in terms of, like, we've got the coral and we've got the eels and we've got the bombs? What is, for each of you, what is your favourite, like, game factor that you managed to put in there beside the basic elements?
I think for me, it's my favourite character is the eel, just because of the Tom and Jerry style electrocution that he does to all the rest of the fish once you set him off. I just think that's quite cute, and they all run away.
That's not fair. I was going to say that.
Well, I mean, that's good. The eel is very, very cute. So, also, what was the most challenging thing artistically for you to do, DT? What was the hardest thing to keep consistent or to get right?
Oh, it's a hard one to answer. I think probably the fish themselves, and making sure, because they were so small and there's so many of them on screen, getting them to stand out when they're all in a cluster was probably the most difficult. That's why we've done so much with the colours and the patterns and stuff, just to make them that more obvious. The animation took a bit of time to do as well, but that's a lot of fun. Whereas changing colours and stuff isn't. So that was probably the hardest thing to do.
Okay.
Getting them to stand up.
Yeah, I mean, it is quite a challenge because Valve talked quite a bit about that with their individual Team Fortress characters. So with the code, Tony, I mean, I think I already know the answer to this, but a lot of people, especially who haven't actually worked in the industry on a platform like Sony or Microsoft or whatever, haven't experienced submission and the details of submission. Now, we can't go into details, but on such a small project, how much of your time was taken up with submission and being compliant?
Luckily, with being a mini, it gets rid of most of the compliance tests because you're not allowed to do networking and anything online. The only real thing we had to concentrate with the save system, which is always a fun one. I think I would guess about 2 weeks of rejigging and repoking to make sure it conformed to all the standards, and there is a good 20 or 30 standards too.
So that's 2 weeks of an 8-week project.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we put the game in, we thought it was all right, we failed the initial submission, and then we were straight back in a week later, but we already knew we were going to fail after seeing an initial bug report, so...
Yeah, I mean,
I would say 2 weeks of my own time, yeah, 10 days.
That's for a smaller game like that, that's a big hit.
Yeah, definitely, I mean, and that's, you know, and we've made PSP games before, and we definitely know what to look out for. Unfortunately, been so long since we made a PSP game, there's things we forgot. And I think for a new developer getting hired on the PSP platform, the first thing you should do is definitely go straight for the TRC and make sure you no surprises for you.
I mean, especially a lot of people coming to XBLA, I mean, it's something Microsoft says a lot, is before you design your engine, before you design your game, you should look at what the requirements are for the platforms you're looking at, because it's a very hard thing to retrofit those sort of requirements.
Yeah, I mean, it'll all depend on how the game's designed, but yeah, if you can take the game to a point where it's a real pain in the ass to try and implement some TRC things if you've not thought about it to begin with. And there was a few changes we had to make to the actual game of AcroAttack to conform to some of the standards, so yeah, it does affect your game code, so don't just think it's a superficial layer.
Yeah. Otherwise, with the control systems, were there any, I mean, I remember there was some initial discussion, how do you find the PSP controls and how do you best serve, you know, the fast-paced nature of the game with these controls?
From the initial prototype, the game actually controlled quite differently because it was designed on a PC, and it was easy to point with the mouse. So when we initially, after the initial prototype, we decided to go with the platform PSP, we did change some of the game design elements to make it much faster for PSP controls. So yeah, I mean, the way the game's designed is just as it is designed for the two D-pad structure of a normal thing with a D-pad and four buttons on the right. Then that's what we've gone for.
Now, the other thing I mentioned before was that we've now with Glow and AcroAttack, we're doing a lot of our own IP, and we've also taken on to some extent the marketing and the community for that. And we've got a Facebook page up for this, and we've got a Twitter feed for the company. How have you found the challenge of, I mean, obviously it'll escalate once the actual game is out, but how have you found the challenge of finding worthwhile things to push out to the community?
Certainly, as this is like some of the first community stuff that we've done, a lot of it I was just making up to begin with, but now we've started doing a bit more research, we're looking around at what other people are doing, and the challenge comes from just trying to deliver content weekly, to keep people interested. And finding time to do it. But now we have lots of ideas for content. Hopefully we should see a lot more stuff going up, and hopefully we get a lot more feedback from the community. And that's what we really want, is feedback from the community, so that we can start, you know, making games that they want rather than, you know, just what we think they want.
Yeah, because we're looking at a serious post-launch push on this in terms of, you know, responding to the community. And, you know, as we've said before, we don't think this is the end of AcroAttack. This is more just the start of AcroAttack.
Yeah, I think with most downloadable games now, the launching of the title is just the beginning, and then that's certainly how we're seeing it. I guess less so with Aquatac, because you can't, as I say, because it's cut down for minis, you can't do DLC and stuff. But as it goes to other platforms, we will hopefully be able to do post-launch updates for new levels, new modes, certainly across all our other titles, and community feedback, and so hopefully it sells well enough that we want to do a sequel, and we can get in the modes everybody wants, and that will definitely help increase our sales, I think.
Yeah, I mean, community is such an important thing. There was a very good talk at Games Horizon this week that was talking about marketing and stuff. And my favourite quote there was, digital marketing is like sex. Everybody's talking about it. Some people are doing it and most are bad at it. So we've looked at the company, getting developers involved because, with the community stuff, it is key that the team itself talks out there, the authenticity of that communication and the dialogue. With such a small team, I mean, obviously other members of the company can pull in content for Aquatac, but with such a small team, how do you keep the content relevant?
Ooh, that's a good question. I mean, I think for now it's going to be a bit of trial and error and seeing what, this is, I guess, our second Facebook site for games. We've got a Glow one out there. For now, our main goal is just to keep pushing content every week and I guess just see from that what people respond to, what they like, what the community members get involved with, and the stuff they get involved with we'll try and do more of, and the stuff that they don't seem bothered about, I guess we'll leave to the wayside or to try and make it more relevant.
Okay, well, what was your DT, what was your the thing that you had to cut, the one thing that we just didn't have time for that you most regret?
It was a lot of background stuff. There was, I had ideas of putting wheels and divers in and submarine and an octopus and just moving around in the background, just incidental stuff that wouldn't be necessarily seen all the time, just now and again. And I had to ditch all that, which was a bit of a shame.
Yeah, I mean, it is always hard. There's always things that need to be cut. But, yeah. And Tony, what was your...
My biggest thing was cut was the puzzle mode that I wanted to do, which was going to be a mode where the idea was to clear the board all in one. You got like three moves to like adjust the grid, and it was set up a chain of events to try and clear the whole board. We put in two of the challenges, kind of show how that would work, just as like a sneak preview to hopefully a puzzle mode in the future, for another version or another platform. For me, that was going to be one of the most fun, because everyone likes, setting off a chain of events where you just see bombs and eels exploding and all the fish running away to clear the grid.
Now, there's a lot of difference between the balance between quality and innovation. I mean, something we've suffered internally with a lot of our IP, which we haven't actually pushed in the past, is we've been very heavy on innovation. And, the innovation comes at a cost. It comes at a development cost. It comes at a technical cost. There's lots of risk involved. Aquatac, generally, while it's a very high-quality game and we've, really polished it, the core game itself is, well, without being, rude, it's light on innovation.
Simple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've kept it down. And, I mean, that kept the development schedule really short. I mean, one programmer... Eight weeks, two of which was,
I mean, a lot of that's because we knew how the size of the team was going to be and the time we had to do it. So the idea was to keep it small. It was to take elements from other puzzle games we've already seen and the fun ones and really bring them out and make something, a product that the people will know, when they pick it up, they'll know what to do pretty much instantly. And you can just have fun with it straight away. It's very low risk in that area.
DT, as an artist and as a gamer, how do you feel about innovation and the value of innovation?
It's obviously very important. I mean, things is moving on all the time, but at the same time, you kind of have to drop back to the core element of the game, which needs to be fun. Aquatac is fun to play, and I'm not a particularly big fan of puzzle games. I tend to stay clear of them. This one I've played umpteen times and I still have fun playing it.
Yeah, now, I mean, people still occasionally pick up the dev kit and have a few goes at it.
Yeah. It's just that's mainly one of the things that you need to get right. It has to be fun to play. you know, you can develop on that and build on that and make things much, much better and nicer and everything prettier and, you know, things work so much better. But as long as you have the fundamental element of fun and entertainment and enjoying it, that's the main thing to focus on.
At what stage of the project for you did the fun become visible? When did the fun, when did you pick it up and think, actually, this game is fun?
When Tony Lehrer's played. up to a certain point, I was just doing animations and artwork. Didn't really get to see how it was developing in-game until, you know, a few weeks on, and then got a hold of it and started playing it. And that's when you realise, like, it all kind of come together and gelled together and worked pretty well.
When for you, Tony, because you would have seen it earlier, when for you did the fun hit?
For me, as I was playing, I was obviously making it, so I knew exactly how everything worked. I'll say once I started putting the challenge mode in and I started seeing other people play and how they played it, that was where it got more interesting and more fun for me, allowing me to change the challenges, increase the difficulty, and just see how people got on with it again, seeing people play it the next day.
Really? I mean, yeah, I've seen other people play your work is always such a fun thing. In terms of innovation as a developer and a gamer, what are your thoughts on innovation?
You know, it's definitely something you want to try and get. I mean, it makes you stand out from the crowd, and you can think. But the biggest drawback is you've got to make sure that it's fun. I mean, it's probably quite easy to innovate, but to innovate and, you know, make sure it's polished and fun. And the biggest thing is understandable, because with innovation, it's generally something that's brand new. And if you can't get across exactly how to play it or how the mechanics work, then you're going to lose people before you even get started.
Yeah, I mean, we have been heavy on innovation in the past and suffered for it. Mm-hmm. So I think AquaTac is a direct response to the over-innovation in our other titles. And as you say, the core thing is the fun, and it delivers there. So with the two-person team, and we've spoken about this before, fortunately it has quite a short cycle, but developer fatigue, how do you address that on a project where it's literally the two of you, you can't delegate to anyone?
I have to say, this is probably one of the first projects I didn't really get fatigue on it too much, other than a few nights working late, but because of the fast prototype and quick design changes and seeing people play it and being able to change it for the next day for myself, The fatigue didn't really set in until you got to the boring stuff like the TRC stuff and all the stuff you have to do to get through final submission through Sony. But the game wise, it was all great fun.
Yeah. I didn't feel any fatigue at all. Fortunately, when all the horrible stuff at the end turns up, he's too busy working. I get to just play on and, you know, tweak animations and what have you. So it didn't really get boring at all. There was no stress involved at all. Just a nice game to work on.
So moving forward as a company, we are looking at lots of smaller titles and getting our own IP out. And I'll go with DT first, because obviously you were involved in the decision making there, but how does it feel to work on these smaller titles as opposed to the bigger titles like World Sports Party we did?
I loved it. I really loved it. It's such a difference, and especially because it's a short period of time as well. There's no time to get bored. You just get in there and you get as much done as you can, which is what happened. When we worked on bigger titles and you're working with more people, it kind of gets a bit frustrating now and again. You're relying on other people, and this way, it was just the two. It was nice to do. I knew what I was doing. He knew what he was doing. And we just got on and done it. Much, much nicer to work on than bigger games.
And Tony, I mean, as I say, you were involved heavily in the decision-making of where we were going to take the company. Yeah. But how do you feel as an individual working on smaller titles rather than larger?
At the time, I didn't think I'd like it. I'd like, you know, we did Sports Party for Ubisoft, a nice big title. But yeah, when you're working on a title for nearly a year, the fatigue does set in after about 6 months, and there is no break from it. You have to carry on, and you have to get that game out and developed on time. For even the smaller titles that are like 2 months long, the fatigue can set in if you're not enjoying the title. But I think on a title that's 6 weeks, there's just no time. It was just let's get it done, and it was fun to do. And I think that comes down to. If you don't think the game's going to be fun before you even start making it, then fatigue's going to set in faster, and you're probably not going to deliver a product that could be as fun as it should be.
Now, our own IP, no publisher, we didn't even really put a producer on this. Mm-hmm. So how was the freedom to make fast changes and just take decisions? How did that affect you, both on an art level and a programming level?
Obviously, as it's self-published, I was making the decisions fast daily. The proof of these decisions was literally the next day when people played it, and if it was wrong, it was only lost a day. We could change it again. And only when you're working on a bigger game with a publisher, if you're making big design changes outside of the original design doc, then there's always going to be almost a 2, if not a week turnaround as you re-put that into the design doc, send it off to the publishers, get them to okay it, and then that to come back, and it can be a bit of to and fro if they say yes, but can we change, can it be a bit more like this or a bit more like that, and it can that can get frustrating and hold things up. So it was much nicer just to be able to make the decisions myself, change the game, and see how it panned out the next day.
And for you, DT?
It all come down to time for me. It was things that didn't make it in simply because we just didn't have the time to do it. That's about it, really. Sorry, I'm
okay,
really sweating.
So AquaTech is out on Wednesday.
Next Wednesday, 7th of July.
And we've got a whole bunch of high score times pasted on Facebook.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've got leaderboards, so hopefully people will come post theirs and we can create a community leaderboard as well.
Yeah, we'll create a community leaderboard. I'm sure we're going to be running some contests and some just general community stuff going there, so keep an eye on it. Mm-hmm. And we've got that wonderful advert that Nick threw together, the talking fish.
Yep.
Who voiced that, by the way?
Mick, our
our design manager.
Design manager, yes.
We voiced
it in this very studio and just played around with the air pitch and stuff just to make it a bit more comical. And it's come out really nice. It's probably one of the best adverts we've done for a game. Really proud of it.
AquaTech, really, I highly encourage you guys to get it. It's a very addictive, a short puzzle game. And it's out. And keep an eye on our Facebook page. And thank you very much for Tony and DT joining me there just to talk about their project, which is now just finished, and to see it pushed out.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And always give us feedback on the blog post, or you can catch me on Twitter at Evil Kamau. And also, if you go to the podcast suggestion page, should suggest who the hell you want me to drag in: artists, programmers, QA people, design people, the mysterious person who lives under the stairs. Okay, thank you all. And that's for the Moral Penguin signing off. Cheers.